After months of on and off talks, House and Senate negotiators reached an agreement yesterday on the Defense Authorization Bill for 2016. The legislation would make sweeping changes to the military's personnel and acquisition systems. But as Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu reports, it's nearly certain to be vetoed for entirely different reasons.
The defense bill authorizes military spending at almost exactly the same levels the Obama administration asked for in its 2016 budget. But it gets there by moving tens of billions of dollars in ongoing DoD spending obligations out of the department's base budget and into wartime accounts, which are not part of the Budget Control Act. The White House and Democratic lawmakers see that as an end run that spares the military from sequestration without having to fix the problem for the rest of the government. President Obama has promised to veto a defense bill that takes that approach, and for the same reasons, no Democratic members signed the House-Senate conference report, even though they said they agreed with almost everything in the bill, which mostly deals with policy matters. But those policy matters would have huge implications for the Pentagon's day-to-day operations. Both chambers proposed huge acquisition reforms in this year's bill, but the Senate version's more comprehensive changes won out over the House's incremental approach. The House mostly gave in to John McCain, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, who wants the military departments and their uniformed service chiefs to play a much more active role in procurement decisions.
The service chiefs will have to sign off that they are aware of and cognizant of any single overrun, and that also brings them into the acquisition process. We think that one of the biggest problems in the past is that no one has been held accountable for cost overruns. Now, the signature of the service chief is going to be on a piece of paper, and so they're going to be heavily engaged in the entire process. And by the way, every uniformed leader that I know of supported such a measure.
Perhaps more importantly, the bill would significantly reduce the role that DoD's Undersecretary for Acquisition Technology and Logistics plays in the approval process for major defense acquisition programs. In most cases, the assistant secretaries of the Army, Navy, and Air Force would become the milestone decision authorities for their own large acquisition programs.
I think the Senate was very thoughtful and supported a lot of the testimony that Adam and I had on the service chiefs playing a greater role in making acquisition decisions. If a program has a non-McCurdy violation, then the Office of the Secretary of Defense acquisition, AT&L, can jerk it back. But the essential going in position is that the service chief is in the future. And so this is for programs moving ahead primarily.
On personnel issues, the two chambers were actually not that far apart from the beginning. To the surprise of some observers, both the House and the Senate Armed Services Committees had already accepted several of the key recommendations of a Blue Ribbon panel on military compensation and retirement, including provisions that would reduce the guaranteed pensions military members receive after having served at least 20 years, while hopefully offsetting that reduction with a new government contribution to military members' thrift savings plan accounts. A similar provision survived the conference committee, but under the final agreement, it won't actually take effect until 2018. The House and Senate negotiators were more divided on other matters, including whether to raise the military health system's co-pays for prescription drugs at retail pharmacies. The Senate had agreed with the White House that TRICARE beneficiaries should pay more of a premium at retail pharmacies as one way to encourage them to get their brand-name drugs in ways that are less costly to the government, including through TRICARE's mail-order program and at military pharmacies. But the House wanted to hold the line on higher co-pays. House Armed Services Committee Chairman Mac Thornberry.
What all of us agree, I think, are number one, on the provisions that are in this bill, which are more modest increases than the Senate had, but obviously more than the House had. Secondly, that we're going to do. There's a lot more work to be done on TRICARE, and TRICARE reform in a way not only that saves money but that provides better service is a goal that the four of us have agreed will be a very high priority in the coming year.
The House and Senate are also in agreement about the notion that DoD has not done enough to cut its civilian staff at the same time it's reducing military payroll, so the final bill would order the department to cut its headquarters staff by 7.5% per year over the next several years and come up with at least $10 billion in cost savings from those reductions between 2015 and 2019. Adam Smith, the ranking Democratic member of the House Armed Services Committee, says he agrees with 98% of what the conferees approved in the final bill, which is scheduled to go to the House floor on Thursday. But like most other Democrats, he declined to sign the final report.
I think a lot of very good work has gone into this bill, and there's a lot of good substance there. The lingering problem is what both my colleagues alluded to, and that is the OCO funding, and that the budget caps are still in place. You know, locks in place a plan that has only 1 year spending through OCO. And we just, you know, I was just at a meeting with Secretary of Defense Carter, in which he emphasized his opposition to a bill that contains OCO funding, because that 1 year money does not give them the freedom to plan and to actually have a normal budget process in the way that they would like. So it's really the OCO funding that's left in the bill that is the fly in the ointment of this bill.
The rationale for Democratic opposition, according to Senator Jack Reed, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Armed Services Committee, is that if it were allowed to pass, using $38 billion in overseas contingency operation funds, a safety valve that no other federal agency has to bypass sequestration, there wouldn't be much reason for members on the opposite side of the aisle to keep working for a grand budget bargain.
There are many commendable items in this legislation, but the one fundamental issue that prevents me from supporting the legislation is the failure to change sequestration, the reliance on the overseas contingency operation funds. And I'm afraid that not only is this sort of, we understand our national security is much more than just the Department of Defense. It's Homeland Security. It's the Treasury Department and all they do with respect to terrorist financing. It's a host of other agencies. And we have to have a solution to sequestration. And I'm afraid that if we follow through with this legislation, not only we won't deal with it directly, but we'll give some people, as I said before, an excuse not to deal with it. The view of most military leaders is that this is not a sustainable formula. You can't rely every year on OCO funds going forward. You have to have a regular budget in which they can predict and plan over at least 5 years. There is many commendable things in here, but we do have to fix sequestration.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.